In the 1970s, Robert Logan taught a course called The Poetry of Physics at the University of Toronto. Through the course, Logan met Marshall McLuhan. The meeting was a watershed in Logan's life. Today, he is Professor Emeritus of Physics at the University of Toronto and the author of Understanding New Media, Extending Marshall McLuhan. Logan told Anne Strainchamps about the first time they met.
Well, I was struck by his extraordinary understanding of my field of science and physics, and his broad, well, his total knowledge of just about everything. But more impressive of all was the way in which he connected different things. We became fast friends because, being the kind of guy that I am, when connecting poetry and physics, I was McLuhan's kind of guy. We worked together to the end of his life.
Well, I'm really fascinated by how predictive much of his work was. I mean, especially in terms of thinking about the media landscape, he practically predicted the internet, which, you know, certainly was not even a glimmer in anybody's eye yet.
He was introduced by Matt Hillock to six senior IBM officials. And at the lunch, he said that someday, this was in 1966, he said, someday every family will have a computer and they won't have to go out to shop. They'll just be able to order things with their computer. After the lunch, the executive said to Matt Hillock, that man, that Marshall McLuhan you brought, he's really crazy. And here McLuhan was predicting the arrival of the personal computer in early 1980s.
Oh, that's astonishing.
Yeah, I'll give you another example. He once said, someday we're going to have a device about the size of a hearing aid that will bring us information from all over the globe, and you'll have instant access to all the libraries of the world. So not only did he predict the internet, he predicted smartphones, he predicted Wikipedia, he predicted Google Books.
Wow.
The man was extraordinary.
And then there was his concept of the global village, which you should explain it to me, but it sounds to me awfully like Facebook.
Yes, it is. That's only one example. But even before Facebook, what he said was with electric information, where you're being bombarded by information from all sides, from every point on the globe, the things that you hear about through the media affect you as though they're happening in your own village. So most of us felt great sorrow for the people of Libya because of the oppression of Gaddafi. We're all rooting for the people in Tahrir Square when the Egyptians were fighting for their freedom. And the feelings we had were like this was happening, you know, two streets away from where I live. Mm-hmm. This was not some remote country. This was something we all cared about. That's something that was not true before we had TV. Think about how the Americans ducked World War I and World War II until they were finally driven into it. They didn't enter World War I until 1917, when it was almost over. They didn't enter World War II until they were bombed by the Japanese.
Hmm. How was McLuhan able to be so insightful about the form our future media would take, do you think? I mean, did it have something to do with the fact that he had spent so much time looking at the medium rather than the content?
That's right, and the fact that he looked for effects rather than causes. He said, I never predicted anything about the future that didn't happen today. So what he did was he looked at the trends of his time and just used his imagination to extend their logical consequences.
Hmm.
And that's why he was able to, you know, achieve the insights that he did.
What do you think he'd be telling us about our media today? Because, you know, the media landscape has changed out of all recognition since he was here.
The first thing he would say would be, I told you so. Because everything he predicted, every description he made of mass electric media happens to be true for digital media, but even more so. So he talked about how electric media would decentralize. Well, nothing is more decentralized than the internet and the World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm.
He told us that knowledge would become the main driver of the economy. He said this in the 60s. It wasn't until the 80s, maybe the 70s and 80s, the people like Toffler and others that talked about the knowledge economy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess he was a prophet.
Mm-hmm.
best way to describe it. And what's ironic is that he came under attack by his colleagues in academe. And to this day, there are still people that in academe that regard him as a charlatan because he didn't follow the rules as they do. What they do is they package information in nice little bundles with footnotes.
You've written recently, kind of extending his ideas into the digital media landscape today. As you look at the world we have now of the internet and smartphones and video games and Facebook, what message do you see inherent in the digital media that surrounds us?
Let me be like McLuhan and say, there's one thing McLuhan missed. He talked about how reading and writing would become obsolete with electric media. Mm-hmm. And actually what's happened is that literacy has regained its position in our lives because the web, texting, kids are using language all the time, written language. Now, they're changing the nature of the language. They have a different way of using written language. I imagine that Marshall right now would be LOL about this development, just to illustrate this idea, right? So that to me is one of the surprises of the digital age is that literacy is making a great comeback. And with e-readers, e-books, people are reading even more than they did before the e-book arrived on the scene.
His work was so predictive of where we are today, but I wonder what you would say his continuing relevance or continuing value to us today is.
I think he, in some ways, created an environment that allowed today's developments to occur. I mean, some of the predictions he made was, he said, the new captains of industry, the people that would be able to exploit electric media, would be playful, not serious types. Hmm. And when you think about who created Facebook, who created Apple, they were all young kids that were having fun. They were hobbyists. They were just playing. Jobs and Wozniak that created Apple, before they created their computer, had created a device to cheat Bell out of long-distance phoning. They created a device that allowed you to make a long-distance phone call from a phone booth for free.
This makes me curious about, are there any predictions McLuhan made that have yet to come true but might be on some drawing board somewhere? Or I guess by now it would be a whiteboard, wouldn't it?
I wish I could put my finger on one. I could probably make $1 billion.
Darn, I was hoping for that stock tip.
Right. But of course, once we broadcast this right across the country, someone out there would exploit the idea. In fact, McLuhan once said that the way to solve problems was to go on television, have an audience of 1 million people, and he said one person in that group of 1 million, whether they're educated or not, would come up with a solution to the problem.
So now he invented crowdsourcing too.
Oh yeah, he did invent crowdsourcing for sure.
Looking back now over the years you were working with Marshall McLuhan, do you have any particular favorite memories of that time?
Well, I certainly do. Not long after beginning my collaboration with Marshall, we used to work in the coach house, and we would walk to the cafeteria for our lunch. And so we're walking to the cafeteria, and we're passing by St. Basil's Church on the campus of St. Mike's. St. Michael's College. And Marshall said, Bob, would you mind, I'd like to step into St. Basil's and hear the noon mass. It's only 15 minutes. I'll catch up with you in the lunchroom. I said, oh, Marshall, let me join you. He said, oh, that would be very nice, Bob. So there we were. He was praying for his salvation, and I was praying to understand what he said that morning. Oh, I just thought of another great story. Okay. One more. On the telephone, we began to argue as to whether the Hebrew alphabet or the Semitic alphabet was the first alphabet or whether it was the Greek alphabet. Marshall claimed it was the Greek alphabet because it had the vowels, which the Hebrew alphabet did not have. And we were arguing over the telephone. And he finally said, Bob, we'll never settle this over the phone. Come on over for lunch. Well, this was my first invitation to his home, and I got very excited. I immediately went home, changed into some clean duds, went to the liquor store, bought a bottle of wine, arrived at his house 30 minutes later, rang the doorbell, the door flew open, and there was Marshall McLuhan with an apron that had the Hebrew alphabet emblazoned on it. I handed him the bottle of wine, and he said, thank you, and he put it on the mantelpiece, and he said, come into the kitchen. I have lunch prepared for us. And what did he serve me for lunch? He served me a bowl of alphabet soup.
Robert Logan is the author of Understanding New Media, Extending Marshall McLuhan. He spoke with Ann Strainchamps.
Global Village is not created by the motor car or even by the airplane. It's created by instant electronic information movement. The Global Village is at once as wide as the planet and as small as a little town where everybody is maliciously engaged in poking his nose into everybody else's business. The Global Village is a world in which you don't necessarily have harmony. You have extreme concern with everybody else's business and much involvement in everybody else's life. It's a sort of Ann Landers column writ large.